We kick off hour number three of the program. This segment brought to you by Gold's Gym, the official gym of Three and Out. Nate Hodges, Houston Crest, Billy Williford with you. And as always, you can check out the free three-day VIP pass at goldsgym.com. Download it. Work out absolutely free before you join and find the location nearest you, goldsgym.com. They got them all over the place, wherever you're listening, even if you're podcasting or listening to the live stream. And now we go to Davey Hudson with today's fitness tip of the day.
For today's Gold's Gym fitness tip of the day, we are continuing our theme on making sure we are exercising properly to avoid injuries. Be aware that training too hard or too often can cause overuse injuries like stress fractures, stiff or sore joints and muscles, in addition to inflamed tendons and ligaments. Sports prompting repetitive wear and tear on certain parts of your body, such as swimming, which affects your shoulders, jogging, your knees, ankles, and feet, and tennis, your elbows, are often overused culprits. A mix of different kinds of activities and sufficient rest is safer and will benefit you in the long run. And that is today's Gold's Gym Fitness Tip of the Day.
That's Davey Hudson, former 12-week challenge winner at Gold's Gym. And if you swing in there, let them know you heard about them right here on 3 and Out. It's Gold's Gym, the official gym of 3 and Out. Bill Connolly was running a ton of SEC stats for the 2019 SEC East preview for ESPN. He's got some stuff about, you know, Georgia, and then does Florida have an offensive line, Missouri's culture, LOL, the South Carolina schedule. It's really hard. Mark Stoops versus maintenance. Keyshawn Vaughn, I guess, was the one good player Vanderbilt has. And then Vols have all the continuity. It's the title of Tennessee's blurb, I guess. But the most interesting thing was he was running the week-to-week S&P rankings, and he tweeted this with the graphics. Man, like every Tennessee run play last year went backwards, and Jarrett Garantano was constantly under pressure, and he, all caps, willed that offense to decent numbers. Kind of strengthens the argument that at minimum, you can't hold last year against Jarrett Garantano. And at maximum, with Jim Chaney, the offensive coordinator with a clue, with a guy that might tell Pruitt, hey, we do need to run a, you know, 2019 offense here, there may be a chance for a huge step forward for the Tennessee offense. I hadn't seen this this graphic where, you know, it looks like the baseball stuff. I don't know. Is there a term for this type of graph where it expands out from the center into the four different quadrants?
I mean,
they just call it the radar.
The radar, yeah. Radar. I mean, it's very commonly used in the NFL. I've seen this.
Oh, yeah, I have seen that.
This has a lot more data points.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it's, you know, efficiency, third down. I mean, it's kind of 5 to 6, 7 stats. This is deep diving stuff. But basically, it shows that Jarrett Garantano, when he had some time, was pretty good.
What's funny is, so there, it gives you these stats in as a ranking of all of college football. These aren't like the numbers. It's a ranking.
Right, it's where he fits in nationally.
But the ranking of one is to the outside. So the farther out a data point goes, the higher you are in the rankings.
Yeah, the better you are.
So the
what you really want is a wide circle here.
Right.
Yeah.
The first thing that...
This is not a wide circle.
...jumped out to me was that...
But this also has rushing, so...
Yeah. Right. This is the whole 2018 Tennessee offense, which we know wasn't very good. The average distance on third down is almost at ground zero, which means you're almost dead last in the country. I mean, you're within the 121 circle, meaning that you are ranked lower than 121, like outside the best 121 programs in college football.
You're right at 121 on stuff rate.
Well, I think the 121 is the first line. So I think how many teams are there now? 132?
Oh, yeah, that might be, yeah. Sorry, that's rushing S&P. So, yeah, you're
Oh yeah, sorry. Yeah, stuff rate is like at zero, like the worst.
You're the worst. You had the worst stuff or best, rating. Depending on. It's the worst.
Yeah, you're ranked.
You
worst
got stuffed at the line of scrimmage a lot.
You're the
rushing
best at S&P, getting stuffed. Yeah,
line yards per carry, opportunity, like it's all horrible. Like Tennessee couldn't run the football last year. I mean, you. The best stat is rushing S&P, and that's probably because you broke a couple runs that skewed it. You know, against like UTEP or something.
Mm-hmm.
But then,
and it makes your efficiency suck.
Yes.
But then as you look over to the left-hand side, the two quadrants there are passing and explosiveness. Billy, look up what ISO PPP plus is. Or maybe it says that somewhere else. But anyway.
10-yard rushes per game, you were still basically bottom of the pack. You see all that stuff?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I don't know what ISO PPP plus is. Pass
isolated points per play?
Could be points per play.
Points per pass?
Oh, I bet it is points per pass.
So, yeah, so.
I mean, we knew he didn't throw a lot, and we scored most of our touchdowns passing the football, so that would make sense.
Yeah.
So throwing the football was our, is it points per play or points per pass?
Points per play.
Points per play.
I feel like that can't be right. Well, it probably is because we didn't
hurry up. We punted all the time. Like, we just had very low play numbers every game.
Fair. A lot of three and outs. Thanks for the advertising. 30-yard passes per game, though. You're
good.
Yeah. That's your top certainly top 40.
Yep.
20-yard passes per game, not great. Sub 61. Yards per completion, top 25. Passing S&P, I'd say, what's that, top 40?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, his tweet sums it up, man. Like, my man's getting hit all the time. You have no running game. He's getting sacked at a higher rate than just about everybody in the country, and the only reason this team had any offensive success is because Jerick Garantano was able to find open guys and hit big plays. You know, I will say that about the offense last year, and we knew this about Tyson Hilton, that we took deep shots. I hate offenses that don't try to go vertical. I will give Tyson Hilton a tip of the cap, and I know what I'm getting with Jim Chaney, so I don't think that, you know, that's not going to stop.
Right.
But I like the vertical shots. Typically, if you can run it at all, that helps you run it more. Unfortunately, last year, I mean, well, and that's what's amazing, is like Tennessee could not run the ball. And it's not like teams were run blitzing. You know what I mean? They would put 4-5 guys in the box, and we just couldn't move anybody. So not only was Jerick Garantano efficient, he was efficient against more defenders typically, while getting hit by a fourth or fifth rusher or a third rusher, depending. I mean, it's pretty remarkable. I mean, I can remember watching the West Virginia game, and they'd only send three guys, and rarely would Jerick Garantano have more than, you know, like 2 seconds with three guys. That's two that can get double-teamed. And Tennessee was unable to block anybody.
ISO PPP is a little bit deeper. Instead of simply looking at the success rate and equivalent points per play, what if we added success rate and points per play for only successful plays? So that's what that number is.
So basically, when Tennessee moved forward, it was very, very good.
It's one of the best in the nation.
So when we weren't getting stuffed, which was every time essentially based on stuff rate, when we actually made a play, when we did it right, big plays.
Because that's in the explosiveness quadrant, so that's what it's trying to measure.
Right. So we were basically a slugger.
Yeah.
Hitting.
We just struck out way too
much. We were hitting 300, but man, when we got a hold of one, over the fence.
300, like 250.
250, fine. Yeah. 250.
300 is a good average.
Well, it's also football, not baseball. Well, I don't know if 3 out of 10 plays is like really good in football to have,
I see
positive.
I thought you were going with the baseball analogy through and through, but you were trying to combine the two. I got you. That makes perfect sense.
That was what baseball would be. Yeah. Okay. So Jerick Garantano might be good. Have we landed there? Is this the point of the offseason where we are at Jerick Garantano might be good?
I've already been there. I was there last year. These numbers back up everything that I said.
I will give Billy credit. He gets accused of being super negative about some things and super positive about others. It means you're doing it right. Josh says, our running game was hurt by the predictable runs on first and second down most games, as well as the poor offensive line play. I will say that. The play calling did no favors to the run game. I mean, when they finally got a little creative, the ISO PPP kind of bears it out. You get a little creative with that crew last year. You don't make your offensive line just... I hated when they tried to run the ball with like eight guys in, you know, in tight blocking. That's when you really couldn't run it. They should have been in four wide, single back shotgun every play last year. And I think if Jim Chaney had been your offensive coordinator last year, you would have been. You would have spread the field.
Go back and look at what Georgia did when they had Swift and Michelle. It was a lot of runs out of the shotgun, out of split back, out of single back. It was a lot of delayed handoffs. It was a lot of kind of like take a step forward, like you're going to block, go back, get the ball, then burst through the hole. I mean, it's a creative way to do things, especially if you have linemen that can't quite win at the initial point of attack, but can kind of withstand and then make a push. That's the beauty of Jim Chaney. Like he should be able to identify, okay, our offensive line is, we're not going to push people backwards 2 yards, 3 yards, 4 yards, but we're not going to get beat that bad, mm-hmm. so we can delay. We're not going to get beat, then we steer somebody a certain way. I don't know. I can't remember if he a zone block guy? I want to say he is. I want to say Jim Chaney's big into zone blocking, and that may be what works out best for this team, although I think they tried that at times last year and occasionally didn't touch anybody. But he should be able to know very quickly, are we designed to win at the point of attack where we want the running back essentially getting to the line as fast as possible, or do we want him in the shotgun where he can read more of what's going on in front of him instead of, here's your gap, run into it, there's five guys, and stuffed. I mean, he'll identify that. What is Ty Chandler comfortable with? What is Jeremy Banks comfortable with? What is Tim Jordan comfortable with? And then I went back and watched the Kentucky game this week. Late in the year, I really liked some of the things Tyson Helton did. I mean, he was running Tim Jordan on those angle routes to the middle of the field. We know Ty Chandler can do it. We know he can run the wheels. We know he can run the verticals. Like, Ty Chandler can do just about anything a receiver can do, as well as take handoffs. I'm hoping Jim Chaney can also find ways to incorporate more of Tim Jordan. I mean, Jeremy Banks can actually catch the ball pretty good. He didn't get that many opportunities. He caught a wheel route against West Virginia. He did catch I think he caught three or four passes in the spring game. That's an extended handoff. We're always talking about last year, like, why aren't we trying to run wide against some of these teams more? Like, we can't block up the middle. Why don't we try to get some of these guys outside? A swing pass is an extended handoff. It gets the running back outside of your tackles, and then assuming, you know, you've got a good matchup with a linebacker, you've kind of got a one-on-one for what could be a 5-yard gain, a 2-yard gain, or a really, really big play if you can make a couple guys miss. I think we've got guys who can make people miss, or in the case of Jeremy Banks, break tackles. I mean, he's just really, really tough to tackle. Like, I would take Jeremy Banks in a matchup against a lot of linebackers and just about any corner or safety he's going to run up against in this league.
The ability of these quarterbacks in this day and age, all the quarterbacks, to make any throw to the outside immediately and read the defenses that way has led the running game to be just where it's easier to not have anybody to block and make a guy miss if there's enough space than to try and block every single person.
Yes.
Because if you miss one little block with the athleticism of the defensive guys, then you end up seeing what happened with us last year.
Well, that's often. Our running game last year, it was almost like it had to be perfect to work, right? Which is why when it worked, it was a big play. But we were so imperfect on the offensive line, and frankly, sometimes at running back. Like, it's a shared thing. And Jarrett Garantano maybe not flipping the play or switching the – you know, the assignments on the offensive line, which now he allegedly has a lot more freedom to do. But, I mean, I know there are certain coaches who that's what they want. We want to be perfect on every single play. But you don't have to be perfect on a play for it to work out.
Right.
You can have an unblocked nickel running right at Ty Chandler, and he puts a foot in the ground, and now he's got 20 yards of green grass in front of him. Is that a perfect play? No, but you're using your skill to beat somebody else's skill. We've said it, right? Like, I think Tennessee has enough skill. I'm not saying, you know, Ty Chandler is Reggie Bush. I'm not saying Marquez Callaway is Antonio Callaway or that Josh Palmer is Dante Stallworth, but I think they've got some guys who can win, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how do we protect Garantano, maybe not rely on the offensive line to play perfect football, and just get these guys the ball where they can make some things happen instead of it has to be right here and it has to be perfect, and if it's not there, well, we're going backwards. We gotta lose the negative plays. Have to. That has to be a really, really big key. And we know Jim Chaney, like, he's not afraid to throw it on first and second down. And if that's what it ends up taking, if it's those, like, those flare passes to the flat, if it's angle routes from the running back, if it's just 5 yards, Dominic Anderson, run 5 yards, turn around. Like, that's going to be there.
Yeah.
You know, so, and that's a quick throw for Jerick Garantano. He's probably not going to get hit. Maybe he can get in rhythm. Those are the things that Jim Chaney can do that last year just seemed way too few and far between. And that's the beauty of Jim Chaney. Again, like, he knows what he has. He knows how to utilize it. He knows how to install things that are, like, they're good scheme. They're difficult to defend, but they're not difficult to teach and to understand. It actually will probably make more sense than what you were trying to install and teach last year.
You know how much better Jerick Garantano is going to be, right?
How much?
Lots. We'll come back with more. Stick with
us. Straight from the horses, man.
Right here on Fan Run Radio. This segment brought to you by the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. It's the official credit union of 3 and Out, and they're celebrating 85 years this year.
Happy birthday.
Getting on up there.
I don't know if it's officially today. Happy birthday year.
Yeah. Yeah.
85. It's a long time.
It is. They've been serving East Tennessee for that long.
How long it's been since Tennessee beat Florida, probably.
Their members grow financially, moving upward and forward. The Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union right now. Christmas in July. You get a savings account.
Mm.
And you can still do the Jumpstart savings account, too, as you've been hearing on the commercials. It's the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union, the official credit union of 3 and Out. Well, you know, Missouri went yesterday. Your boy, Barry Odom.
Yeah, Frank.
Who?
Old Frank Odom.
I had forgotten about the shot he took at Tennessee.
Oh, yeah. We were trying to get all their players to come. Did we get any of it? Remember we looked at their list?
Right.
We found like 4 offensive linemen and a couple receivers, a running back. We didn't get any of them.
No, we didn't. We didn't. Because Missouri got hammered by the NCAA, inexplicably, it doesn't really make any sense why they would and other schools wouldn't, but they did. And under the new rules, their players could transfer freely.
Did they lose anybody?
I don't think so.
It's impressive. I guess that's why everybody was talking about the culture at Missouri yesterday, because they were able to keep everybody despite the postseason ban.
Well, I don't have that quote in front of me, but they asked one of the guys from Missouri yesterday, hey, why didn't you consider going to another SEC school when you could have transferred? And he said, Missouri was the only SEC school to recruit me out of high school, so I don't care about any of the other schools.
Hmm. All right.
Which makes sense.
I mean, yeah, no, it's, yeah,
I like that.
That'll win him a lot of fan favor in Columbia.
Barry Odom said this, though, back earlier in the offseason, quote, everybody's going to have a bad day. You combine that with somebody who we beat 50-17 this year.
Okay, Barry.
Tennessee? Yeah, those guys. They are nonstop reaching out daily. Hey, come here.
Always be recruiting.
The grass is not always greener somewhere else. Odom added that all his seniors were getting bombarded and that it was frustrating. He said that in February. He was asked.
You don't have to answer the phone, man.
It's true. He was asked yesterday about his relationship with Jeremy Pruitt after, you know, obviously pointing out Tennessee. Would have been a lot easier for him to just, you know, mention it in general instead of targeting one coach, but he did mention Tennessee. So he was asked about the relationship now with he and Pruitt. He said, we're okay. Everybody is a competitor and wants to build their team as good as you can build it. When you've got good players, that's a good thing. People want them.
He should be on this show.
I haven't given it another thought. None of Missouri's players left.
It's impressive.
He said, we were very open and honest with each other and the culture of who we are. And David Ubbin wrote a piece, said Tennessee declined to comment on the their approach to roster building. So Oven actually sent in a request for a comment on this before he posted the story. It's pretty funny.
I mean, I get why Missouri would be frustrated, but he has to understand that, like, this is just the business, right?
Yeah.
Like, a two-year developed player at an SEC school is, A, going to take up less time and is already more of a proven commodity than a true freshman at the same position. So it just makes sense. Like, again, I get that they were calling your guys and you didn't like that, but the reality is Tennessee's trying to catch up to you. Like, it's your fault, Barry. You waxed us last year. So, of course, Tennessee's going to look and say, man, those guys can block. They can run. They can tackle. They can catch. Why don't we go try to get a couple of these dudes? I mean, that's why the transfer market is what it is. It is impressive for Missouri, though, that nobody left. Like, that's pretty remarkable considering the postseason ban. I mean, they're playing for nothing this year other than pride.
Well, apparently, Kelly Bryant, right after the news broke, got in front of the team and said, I came here because I wanted to win football games with this team. And I think we can be really – and I think we can really be something special, bowl game or not.
Yeah, I mean, you can be special, just not that special.
Yeah.
You got to win a bowl game. You got to win a championship. You can't even play for one, champ. So. But good for him. I mean, it's positive stuff.
Tennessee is in the heads of every coach and every team every single year.
It is weird. I mean,
like Georgia last year.
Florida got asked about Tennessee this year. Barry Odom got asked about Tennessee. Obviously, last year with Kirby Smart was just a big debacle. Maybe not Muschamp. I don't know if anything can get in that head. He's kind of a dullard. Mark Stoops, I'm sure he'll be asked when he takes the podium. Oh, what was it like last year to have all that success and then get stomped in Knoxville?
Well, Tennessee's pretty good. Yeah.
It's weird. Like, we're insignificant, but we are very significant.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the fan base.
Yeah, Ubbin wrote this article in conjunction with a Missouri guy, I believe, and there was a line in there that surely was written by the Missouri guy pointing out that Tennessee finished last in the SEC East last 2 years. And still, we're
on the tips of the tongues of all these coaches.
And players. I mean,
man. If we could just do something with that of significance other than just be talked about, that'd be great. I feel like Tennessee does win a lot of off seasons. Like, we get a lot of articles written about Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
A lot. I mean, obviously everyone's going to write an article about, you know, Oklahoma and Alabama and Clemson. It's amazing to me every year how many national people, though, chime in on something going on at Tennessee. A lot of that's been bad for the last decade or so. But now it's starting to turn. Starting to feel pretty good. I mean, I feel like when other schools are starting to take shots at you, it means you're maybe doing something that, I don't want to say scares them, but it's, you've got their attention.
Mm-hmm.
It's good to have people's attention, but ultimately you got to do something with it. I wonder what we can do with it. I'd like to shut Florida up.
It'd be nice.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
BYU's not really going to talk. That's why that game scares me. They're just going to come in here and play football. They're not going to buy into the chatter or anything like that. It's a weird game.
Yeah, yeah. You guys just got to take care of business that day. We'll come back with more. Stick with us as we talk through SEC football. It's SEC Media Day. It's going on right now. Jeremy Pruitt to talk this afternoon. Hoover, Alabama. Stick with us right here on Fan Run Radio. Welcome back in to the Fan Run Studios, Fox Sports Knoxville. Talking on all football on the show today. If you missed any portions of it, you can check out the podcast. Subscribe to iTunes. Get those directly to your device. We've got 13 hours each and every weekday of local live coverage for you right here at Fan Run Radio. And you can pick and choose topics you want right there with the podcasting. Subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. If you enjoy what you hear,
or if you don't, we'll still take the rating.
Yeah, that'll work too.
Before we switch to a couple of basketball notes, did Ed Orgeron say anything interesting yesterday?
Well,
I have not seen anything.
They're all talking about their offense because they got some new
toys,
passing game coordinator.
Oh,
from
okay,
the Cowboys, I think.
Okay,
and you know the Enzinger guy is still the official,
yes,
you know, offensive coordinator. But all the stuff yesterday was about how LSU's offense is now going to be a strength instead of a weakness.
I mean, they got better last year with Steve Enzinger calling the plays.
Joe Brady is the guy's name.
Okay. But other than that, nothing really interesting from Orgeron. I was just curious.
Oh, I'm sorry. It wasn't the Cowboys. It was the Saints. He went to the Saints.
Oh, yeah. Even better. Yeah. So Rick Barnes had some things to say about the 2019 squad, Josiah Jordan James. We also have a recruiting update that is potentially huge news for the 2019 team.
All right.
Before that, however, Tennessee had four players declare for the NBA draft. Obviously, two seniors in Schofield and Alexander, and two juniors in Jordan Bone, Grant Williams. All four have signed NBA contracts as of yesterday, when the Miami Heat officially signed Kyle Alexander. I gotta admit, I was a little skeptical when this whole process started as to would Kyle make a team. And I don't know, this may be a two-way contract similar to what Jordan Bone signed.
Not quite yet.
Not quite yet. What?
It's just it's not a two-way contract yet.
Gotcha. Okay.
It's just a summer camp contract.
So he gets to go to camp and try to prove it.
Correct.
But he's going to get paid.
The max he can be paid is $50,000 for this contract. So
okay.
I don't know what.
He was consistent, at least rebounding. And then he ended up, he had a couple of really bad shooting days, but I think they said he shot 44% from the field over the course of the summer. And that's with, I think he had like an 0-for-6 day.
Yeah, it was like 43.8%.
Yeah, so he's
4.3
he turned
points
it around.
A game, 6.3 rebounds per game with 1.5 blocks per game in 16 minutes.
Hey, I said it the whole time, man. You can't teach 7-foot. They either got it or they don't. Kyle's got it. So congrats to him. He'll at least have a chance to earn an official spot with the Heat. Obviously,
yeah.
Jordan Bone, Alexander, and Schofield, really all four guys had great showings. Maybe not every single night, but they all showcased at least one night. I mean, Admiral led the Wizards in points one night and plus minus. Grant was really consistent and really, really good. Until the first round against Memphis, where he kind of backslid a little bit, but also there's some weird coaching decisions in that game. Jordan Bone, after a weird first game, he had, 18 points in the last game for the Pistons?
6 of 12 from the field.
Yeah, I mean, he started to get comfortable. He started to look like Jordan Bone. And then Kyle, as we mentioned, was a rebounding fanatic, especially those last two games. So good for those guys. They all did go out in the first round of the Summer League tournament.
Yeah.
I'm just saying this. I'm just letting it hang out there. They all did lose in the first round.
Yeah, not their fault. It's like JV basketball.
So you're blaming the coach? It's coach's fault?
Well, I'm just saying.
Coach's fault.
I don't think the coaches really care about winning the league.
You guys are coach bashers. That's what you are. I just want you to know that.
Okay. Well, and then Pistons set their best player, so they set the Pistons up to lose.
They were just trying to overcome. Yeah,
they were
probably just ready to be done with that. I don't think I really blame them. I don't think I blame them. But on to what those four left. Obviously, right now, I don't know exactly what the rules are. You cannot hold a practice. I think you can hold small group practices, like 4, 5, 6 guys at a time, maybe even less than that, honestly. And then, obviously, the team can play pickup whenever they want. And we've seen a couple of public calls for a pickup game by Lamonte Turner here and there. But Rick Barnes was apparently on the phone with Kyle Tucker of The Athletic and paused the conversation to yell some instruction at Josiah Jordan James. And when he came back to the conversation, the first thing he led with, "I'm telling you, this kid is special." I could be wrong. I don't remember Rick Barnes really saying that about any of the four. Rob Lanier talked a lot about Bone this year, saying he has, you know, we saw the potential in him. He could be one of the best players on the floor. He's a freak athlete. I don't remember Rick Barnes saying anything this complimentary of a player before he takes the court in an official capacity. That's something. So, and I think it was Jalen Johnson on Instagram 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was tongue-in-cheek. Maybe he was serious. Said Josiah James is the best basketball player I've ever seen. boy, that would be nice. You know, the ability to get guys like this is, I think, what we all expected from Rick Barnes immediately. It's taken a little bit of time and maybe hasn't been as fast or as full as far as, you know, getting these five-star types of talent. But Rick Barnes said that's what winning does. Now that we've won 2 years in a row, we've got guys that really, really want to come here. I don't know. Do we officially start the hype train for JJJ?
He's going to have to be good. He's going to have to be good.
Well, I know. I get that. If we want to be good. But, I mean, is it just that he is good and he is going to be good? Not that he has to be or we're going to stink. Is it just maybe this guy is the truth? Should we come up with a nickname? Like King James is taken.
Okay.
He is. I mean, there is Jordan James. Like, there's something. The GOAT, like, you know, who's the greatest of all time? Is it Jordan? Is it James? Well, we got both, so he's obviously. I don't know. We'll work on it. We're going to work on that. We're going to put that together. We're going to create the T-shirt that's not likeness.
Okay.
But I'm starting to think that maybe this guy is the real deal, which is weird because we went back and looked at his stats for the McDonald's All-American game. He did not have a great night, played significant minutes, and really did not impact the game. It's an all-star game, though, yeah, so, you know, we don't know. I'm excited to watch him play. I am worried about a post presence. Are we going small ball? Like, is that done now? Is it just going to be small ball team?
I was going to say, you want more good news with the guard play?
Yes, yes.
Lamonte's leadership has been unbelievable, Barnes says. As good as anybody since we've been here.
Oh. Taking a shot at Jordan Bone?
Well, there's or Grant or Schofield?
Oh, no.
Wait, read the quote.
He says
again?
As good. He's just saying, yeah, he's
as good as anybody since we've been here.
Okay. He's just saying he's right
on
up
that
there.
Level. Gotcha.
Putting him
he's
on
right
Grant
up there.
And,
all right. We feel good about what we've got, Barnes says. It's just these new guys have to be ready to step up.
Well, that's definitely true.
He feels good about it.
You know, there is some more potential good news out there.
Yeah.
Have you heard the name Nafali Dante?
No.
Nafali Dante is a 6'11 center, 230 pounds, from Sunrise Christian High School in Wichita, Kansas. Class of 2020.
Okay.
He has apparently limited his scope to four schools. Oregon, LSU, Kentucky, and Tennessee.
All right. Here we go.
There's also some buzz around Kansas, but I saw that he is officially named a top four that did not include Kansas, and a lot of people were surprised by that. He's in the 2020 class, but apparently he's contemplating reclassifying to the 2019 class, and if he did so, assuming he graduated high school either in the summer or by the end of this semester, could be on campus and maybe prepared for the 2019 season. He is currently ranked, again, this is in the 2020 class, the number 3 center in the country, number 12 overall, number 1 player in the state of Kansas. Tennessee got a shot. Apparently, they're trying to get him in on a visit over the next couple weeks. My guess is, unlike Blackshear, they're going to be able to say, here's where your scholarship is. It's the one that's not being used. Oh, by the way, we don't have many players over 6'8". You're 6'11 with a 7'2 wingspan. You could probably play tonight.
Let's go.
Oh, by the way, this is Josiah Jordan James. He's special, he's the best basketball player that Jalen Johnson has ever seen.
All right.
I'm not ready to, like, deep dive my hopes into Nafali Dante, but, boy, wouldn't you just forget about Blackshear immediately if you got a kid like this?
Mm-hmm.
Not for 1 year, but, you know, for multiple years. Or if it's one, that just means he was awesome. So we thought the door was closed, and it opens right back up. Went out and got one. You know, he did talk DJ Burns into reclassifying.
He did.
How'd that work out? We got him, didn't we?
We did.
Yeah.
We got him.
Got him. Boom.
Have a lot to sell.
Nafali Dante, by the way, in amazing shape.
Okay, yeah, averaged good. Not fat.
No, played in the Peach Jam recently. Uh-huh. Had 18 points a game, 13 rebounds a game, 2 blocks a game. Like he's athletically ready to go. Like this is not a guy you got a red shirt and get in shape. He'd be ready to play tonight. You gonna get your hopes up?
Nah, I think I'm in wait and see mode.
You guys just can't get excited about anything Rick Barnes is doing, can you?
I mean, it's July.
I mean, basketball starts in November.
Yeah, it's a long way. Long way away.
Not a long, long way away.
I'll be excited if he signs a really good 2020 class.
He's on pace. Although this, in fairness, would take a spot away from the 2020 class. But I think you go ahead and take this guy if you can get him.
Yeah.
What if he's
I'll be excited if Keon Johnson signs.
August 6th?
Yeah, 2nd or 6th? 6th.
That's right around the corner.
That's 2 weeks and change until we know about Keon Johnson.
All right.
If we get Keon Johnson, will you?
I'll be excited.
You'll perk up a little bit.
Yeah,
Nate.
Yeah.
I was more convincing.
What's Nefali's last name?
Dante.
Dante.
That's a lot easier than it's in apostrophe F A L Y. Okay. I hope I'm saying it right. Nefali. Nefali. Folly. Could be a silent in like Kamhua.
Could be.
Mm-hmm. Just saying, I know you guys are out. I'm just saying there might be.
We're not out.
No, you're both out. You're both out. It's okay.
I think we agree with Rick Barnes.
No, you're Barnes bashers.
We just agree with him. These guys better be ready to step up. That's all. That's what it's going to take.
And if they're not, you're going to put it on him, right?
A little bit.
Mm-hmm.
He is the coach. I'm sure he'll be disappointed too. That's great. You know what it is? Even if the team has a fine, good, average year for kind of what we expect and isn't great. If Josiah James is that good, that's going to be a lot of fun to watch. Like, if he's incredible and that gets you to a, I don't know, sixth seed in the tournament, but he has to be that good because these other guys haven't stepped up, that'll still be really fun to watch.
He says the new guys are already working hard and embracing what they're trying to do with the culture.
So you're getting pumped. You're excited.
I'm starting to get back. Right. I'm starting to buy back in.
Final segment right back at you here. It's hour three of Three and Out. Final segment of the program.
We are 4 hours and 40 minutes away from Jeremy Pruitt taking the podium at SEC Media.
Count it down.
No, that's the only time.
Yeah, that was.
I'm gonna
that
give.
That was the countdown.
Yeah, that's
you're
it.
Right. Sorry.
Just so start synchronized watches now.
Now,
4 hours 40 minutes. Goodness gracious. Is Tennessee an interesting team at SEC Media Days? Are we an interesting team? Are people that aren't there to cover Tennessee interested in talking and hearing from Jeremy Pruitt? Like, are Georgia writers and media going to be, well, hey, you stole Chaney. Like, let's talk about that. Or, you know, whoever.
Yeah, and it's year two. So I think that always is a big talking point.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's probably what the questions are going to center around, right? Like, hey, what do you think about the changes you've made? What were some of the things? One of the most, you know, informative interviews I ever heard Kirby Smart give was when he took the podium for year two at SEC Media Days and basically just laundry listed all the mistakes he made in year one.
That was good.
I mean, I don't really particularly care for Kirby Smart, especially after what happened last year, but he was a guy, much like Jeremy Pruitt, who identified a lot of issues in year one and said, yeah, I thought I knew how to be a head coach, and once the season started, I realized how little I knew about certain aspects of time management, of team management, of travel, of practice, of, you know, meetings and all this, and being able to sit in on what I wanted to while also being the head coach when it comes to recruiting. I mean, we remember Jeremy Pruitt's story from year one. He's like, I'm going to go visit this guy, this guy, this guy. And they said, Jeremy, you're the head coach. You can only visit one time. Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm the head coach now. I can't go ping all these guys once a week at their high school. So maybe Jeremy Pruitt gives us that. Maybe he just says, yeah, we messed up doing this, 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 this. Here's what I want. He's already done that a little bit. He's already said, I want to spend more time with my team. Less time in the film room. Less time with the coaches. Less time recruiting outside the building. Like, he wants to be there with his team because he thinks that's the way to kind of instill the culture a little bit better so the guys mm-hmm. believe in him and don't just see him as the absentee head coach who shows up on game days and coaches them. I wonder if we get more than that, though. I wonder if anybody will ask those questions or if it'll be pretty, what do you think you need to accomplish in year two to have success? What do you think about Tennessee fans? What about the FPI saying 9-3? I'd love to know. I don't think you'll get a real answer. I'd love to know what his expectations are for this year. My guess is you'd get the coach speak. I want to see us, you know, compete, play better, play hard, consistency, yada, yada, yada. Maybe we'll get some real answers from the likes of Jarrett Garantano when it comes to he and Jim Chaney. I mean, he's already chimed in on Twitter unprompted saying, I've already learned lots. He's going to help me lots.
Mm-hmm.
Do we hear some inside the room details about what that actually looks like? Some changes. I'd like to see somebody ask Pruitt about the offensive line and Will Friend and what they hope to do differently. And maybe they can ask Jarrett Garantano that question too. But I just don't know if anyone else outside of Knoxville is that interested in Jeremy Pruitt in Tennessee being at Media Days today.
I think,
like, we don't have a star player really. Yeah. We're not expected to compete for the conference or the division, which is good. I mean, we're kind of flying under the radar, so to speak. We're not expecting a horrible season like 2017, and we're not expecting an elite season like 2016. It's, as Billy mentioned, it's year two. Usually good coaches take a big leap in year two. But in a way, Tennessee is, minus the FPI hype, which I would imagine most college football fans don't even really know about, Tennessee's kind of under the radar. We're on the tips of tongues for off-the-field stuff, but as far as football, I don't think anybody really cares. I think it's kind of what the Florida players said. Oh, yeah, those guys. Yeah, they're just around. Is that the case today? Is Tennessee kind of in and out? And does Jeremy Pruitt drop any liquid gold at the podium? Does he have anything maybe that we aren't expecting him to say? Does he take a shot? Does he announce Aubrey Solomon or Gibbs or anything else? I mean, I'm going to obviously watch and listen and read all the interviews and stuff, but there's no really big question that can be answered by Jeremy Pruitt on the podium. That'll start, obviously, in August when Tennessee takes the field.
I don't know. As you went through those talking points, to me, those are pretty interesting. Like, it's like there isn't one big thing, but I guess it just depends on how open he is. He could shut down the answers to all of those, but he could elaborate a lot more and give us some more perspective on all of that too. Does he change much? That's the big question. Is he, you know, just gonna be real coach speaky, or is he gonna have a lot more personality? Biggest jumps from year one to year two.
I just want to win. I don't care. He could be a mute. As long as you can coach him up.
The Blitz is next. Keep it right here for more Fan Run Radio. We'll talk about Jeremy Pruitt's comments and all the SEC Media Day stuff tomorrow. Tune in then at 7.